There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And it's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think. Give us a call or send us a text, 251-343-0106. Joining us in studio, the one and only Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman, Terry Lathan. Thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. What's left of me is here today. It's been a big week, but a good week.
Yeah, well, we get the rest of football season, and then I guess we're looking to get the train wagon, or at least getting it ready to start rolling again for the next elections.
Yeah, you know, actually, since last December, the U.S. Senate race, is the number one question I have is who's running for the Senate race so we can beat Doug Jones? It, by far, every week I'm asked that question.
Yeah, and it's nothing but a smart miracle that Alabama has a Democrat U.S. senator up there, but it is what it is. So pretty good night Tuesday night, I think. Top to bottom, you know, everything from governor to dog catcher, it was pretty solid for Republicans.
Well, it was, but I have to tell you, one of the biggest numbers that's really been jaw-dropping to me is that we flipped 71 seats in the state of Alabama that were Democrats to Republican. And I think, well, you know, when I share that number with people around the state, they're just like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, I'm not. This is not fake news. We're really excited. It's a lot of hard work. You've got county parties, party members, but you know, the most important, and of course the candidates, their families working so hard, their teams, but most importantly, it's the voters are the shareholders, who goes and sits in every one of these seats. And so we're so grateful to our voters for hearing and, you know, following along with the conservative policy in our state.
Yeah, that blue wave, it didn't, I think a lot of candidates were bracing for a blue wave just because you don't know, like, you know, what happened to Doug Jones might could happen to anybody. They could build off of that. And it looked to me just this wasn't your average campaign where candidates, once they get out of the primaries, they just go through the motions of running a general election. They were actually out and about and doing all the things. Is it your sense that you really had an active and engaged Republican Party this cycle?
Yeah. Well, from the Democratic side, it did look a whole lot more, you know, busy than it has in the past. And I don't think that there's any question they had. They had more candidates. They had more presence. Of course, they're doing it all on their own. As we know, the state Democratic Party is practically null and void. And I have no problem with that, actually. But that is not an indication that if the Alabama Republican Party or our people are just winning because they're not functional. We work like maniacs. I mean, foot down, pedal to the metal to make sure we raise the money, we fund our candidates, and help our team across the state. And in fact, you know, now I can say that we put $500,000 into Tuesday. Our state party did, and we were very cautious in how we spent our dollars. I have to raise the dollars. And we scalpeled out the races. We used our data. I mean, it's a real long-term process that we use in the Republican Party.
So, you know, when you have as much success as y'all had Tuesday night, are there any lessons to learn that you could take from this last election and put toward a 2020 where I think everybody's going to be looking at what's going to happen with that race once you get to that general election round?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm never satisfied that I know we can't have it all, but we're going to look at the ones that were close that we might have a shot at next time. So we're going to just drill deeper and deeper into the counties. That's really where we're at right now. Yeah, 2020 is going to be really big. I can feel it already. I absolutely can feel the people in the push. I think 2020, the general election for that U.S. Senate race to win it back, it is going to be record-breaking. I really do. We've continually have record breaking in Alabama since I've been chair since 2016. I think it's going to be that or bigger. And you know who's going to be on the ballot in 2020? Donald Trump.
Right.
And with Alabama being the number one highest approval rated state in the nation with Donald Trump, you know, for the president, I'm liking our odds.
When I guess you got a little experience with this sort of being at the head of the Republican Party in a really contentious primary, as we saw in 2017 for U.S. Senate. What is your role in, you know, I fully expect 2020, that primary to be, it might get ugly. I feel like it's kind of heading that way. We're already gearing up for it 2 years out. What is your role in that sort of scenario?
Well, I have to tell you, actually, 2016, the primary for me was a heavy lift. It was the presidential election right. year. We had 17, and they were all coming into Alabama because they knew we were going to be a red state. Well, I think 15 of the 17 actually came into our state, and I went and met with each one of them and welcomed them. But my role in the primary and really leadership in the Republican Party is to stay out of the primary. I mean, that sounds simple, but we welcome everyone. We qualify the candidates. We try to find good candidates if we have some holes here or there, but if you want to run for office in the state of Alabama, it is, we're to the point right now where it comes to us.
Right.
The party does not play a role officially in primaries. Members can have their own choices, give money, help their own people, but my role is to let the people choose.
Alabama, it's my sense, Alabama in these presidential elections, especially when you have an open field for president, it's kind of one of these states that a lot of eyes watch and a lot of attention's paid to in these presidential primaries, because Alabama goes a long way in determining who that nominee ultimately is.
Yeah, it does. It's a snapshot. I think
right.
it's one of the most reddest states in the nation. But, you know, I feel like in a way, well, all the southern states are pretty red to a great degree. But I really do think people watch Ruby Red Alabama, especially if you're in a primary and you want the nomination of the party, because most of the time you're going to win in the general election. But again, we don't take anything for granted. We're never going to stop. We're going to keep working. I have to tell you that the Democratic Party is helping us really pushing, and we don't have to even do anything. As long as they keep going left of
right.
left of left, you know, Alabamians are not left of left. They're, you know, we're not even really moderate to a great degree. We're just common sense good patriots that love our state and our country, and some of these things that the left are doing are absolutely ridiculous, and we see it clearly. So I think that's one reason so many people have come to the Republican Party. They've had enough of that nonsense in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, there was this sense, or there was at least this talk, that there were parts of the state that were becoming more blue. Tuscaloosa County, Lee County, the Birmingham suburbs. That was where we were going to see the reemergence of the modern Alabama Democratic Party, because you had the Panera Bread, soccer moms, or whatever you want to call them. The suburban sort of mentality lent itself to a Democratic electorate. But Walt Maddox didn't even win his own county.
Yeah,
he lost it by, like, what, 40 votes or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, 30 or so votes. I was just going to say that. You
that
know.
Did, doesn't seem to me that that's the case. And the Democratic emergence, you know, the Doug Jones race to me was a fluke, and I think we could call it
yeah.
a fluke now.
I think that's where the dialogue of the blue pockets, it came from the Doug Jones race. I actually call him one and done Doug. That's my hashtag that I use. And I think as long as he's going to cast votes like he did against the 20-week fetal heart ban, I mean, that's just it's unexplainable to vote for Alabamians to stop a baby's, you know, heartbeat at 20 weeks before 20 weeks. But and then, you know, the cherry on top, he voted no for Alabamians to see Brett Kavanaugh. That, I'm telling you, that is not going to go away. It's not going away.
I would argue that even if he had voted for Kavanaugh, he's probably still in the hot seat. But Joe Manchin learned his lesson and voted for Kavanaugh. One.
Barely.
There's no sense that he's wanting to moderate and kind of be
no.
one of these kind of
no.
red state Democrats like a Joe Donnelly or whatever Heidi Heitkamp was. He's just going left.
Well, I don't think he's going left. I think he's always been left.
Okay.
And so I don't think he's a new person. He's moderate. Now I'm going to go left in a very right state. That's him. I mean, he's doing what I believe he's comfortable with. The problem with is we're not. And we will do something about that when the time comes.
You want to stick around for just one more segment, and we'll get you out of here on that.
No worries.
This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
With Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And the Thursday edition of Midday Mobile rolls on here on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore is sitting in for Sean Sullivan today. We'll continue that conversation with Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan in just a second and also get to some calls. But first, I got to let you know, with holiday season coming up, Thanksgiving parties, Christmas parties, whether they're at work or with your family, you want to show up with the best gifts. That's where Cottage Hill Package Store comes in. They always keep a fresh inventory and a very extensive inventory. I mean, it's such a big package store. You can find just about anything you could possibly want. And don't forget about that huge humidor they have with plenty of cigar options. Go ahead and stop in this week. Check out some of the newest adult beverages. And you never know, you might find a new favorite. Cottage Hill gives you the chance to try hundreds of items in their package store because they have that tap up front where you can try just a taste of a drink or go ahead and get a cold Pilsner. And believe me, you'll want to take some of these beers home with you, and they have you covered. They'll fill a crowler or a growler for you if you're taking it in a four or six pack. The best thing to do if you want to know what's happening at Cottage Hill Package Store, go online, like their Facebook page, or even sign up for the tasting event emails. That way you never miss what's happening at Cottage Hill Package each week. They always have a craft beer tasting, a wine pairing dinner, or a cigar event on the calendar, and you don't want to miss out. They're always a good time. Cottage Hill Package, they have the best selection and the most fun corner in town at Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. Now, back to Jeff and conversation with Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan, and it does look like we have a caller on the line. You want to take that call
now? Yeah, let's go ahead and get the caller in.
All right, and we go out to Daphne and talk with Doug. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing well.
Great show. Terry, you guys are doing a great job. I just wanted to call in and say that. And, you know, you talk about the history of the Republican Party in Alabama. I used to work for it back in the late 70s with Bill Harris and Danny Cooper. And my job was to recruit candidates. And you couldn't find five of them. It was unbelievable. You know, a lot of people don't realize in that 78 election, up into the run-up in the 80 election, that a lot of candidates that we were trying to recruit, some of these people were assaulted, you know, they were beaten. I mean, there was some stuff going on people didn't know about, but to be Republican in Alabama in the mid-late 70s was an anomaly. You just didn't find Republican candidates out there. So we had to recruit what we could, and we came up pretty good. We came up with a zinger with Jeremiah Denton. I got on his staff and helped him. But
yeah, he was one of my favorites, Doug. In fact, we were very good friends. And the last time he came to Mobile, he actually stayed in my house with me for a week before he went back to Virginia. So I miss my friend Jerry. And by the way, first of all, I'm glad you're not Doug Jones, because they say Doug, and I'm like, Doug Jones is calling in.
Look, this may be insensitive to say this, but a friend of mine, as soon as the election was had, he lives in Daphne. He sent me a text. He says, Doug Jones, dead man walking. And
yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he's so far left, he's doing circles right now, so... Yeah, the question is, are we going to have Sessions back in there? You know, you've got Bradley Byrne talking about running. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see what's going to happen here very shortly.
Well, we have come a long way since you've been there, and I'm thankful that you were there. I started my path in 1978 as well, knowing that we weren't going to win anything. But to me, it was about starting somewhere and standing on the principles of the Republican Party. You know, people come and go, but the platform is the platform. And
you're totally right.
To me, that's the 10,000 foot view looking down. And boy, have we changed a lot since you were there, Doug. We're now one of the largest state parties in the nation of the 50 states, the RNC. We have over 60. I think I could say it was 60%. I think I'm safe to say over 60%. I don't have the exact number of all elected partisan offices in Alabama Republican now. We, like I said, we flipped 71 seats Tuesday. I mean, places like, for example, Escambia County with Heath Jackson as sheriff that we never did in our life not long ago think we could, and we kept trying and trying. But this is about message, Doug. It's about content of the message. And we have different messengers, but it's
Shelby
message.
County back in the late 70s, too. You know, Shelby County, Chilton County was always Republican, but we worked on Shelby County. When we turned Shelby County, of course, Baldwin County was always pretty strong Republican, but it took a lot of work. And, you know, I ran a campaign against Shelby, and we found a good candidate out of Marion, Alabama for that. But, you know, we were just trying to get on the board. And it was a tough road to hoe, but you've done a great job, Terry. I've followed your leadership with the party. I just wanted to give you a plug on that. You guys have done a great job.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor. It's an honor.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for your call, Doug. Alabama Republican Party. I kind of remember when I was a kid, but when Guy Hunt won. And
oh, no. I'm so much older than you then.
Well, I think it's middle school, but I remember that was like a big deal. And that, you know, and the way the Democrats fumbled their nomination. But it seems like from then on, that was kind of like the big crack in the dam. Shelby came on board in the 90s after the Newt Gingrich revolution. And then you've kind of, ever since then, 2010, the legislature goes Republican, and you have everything. And here we are today talking about just a dominating performance.
Right. But I have to tell you, with all that, all the good that we just heard and how hard we've all worked, a lot of people, my entire adult life as a volunteer, when I say work, I still am a 40-week-an-hour unpaid state chairman. You do things like that because you love something more than you love yourself. But our problem now, and because there's always problems with big families, right, is complacency. And for the last 6 months, that's been my number one thing I've told everyone around the state. We cannot take anything for granted. We cannot. And I'll tell you what, we did not. Actually, the backside of having so many Democrats get back on the ballot is it made our team work twice as hard. And so the results were good.
Yeah, just the guys traveled around the state on the campaign trail. You started hearing from campaigns you hadn't heard from ever before.
Right.
You heard from these, you know, usually they would put out a few signs and do a few Kiwanis Club or Rotary Club meetings or whatever. This time they got activated. They raised money. They did all the things, put on, you know, bought TV time, radio time, did all these things you hadn't seen in a general election. You would see a lot of it in the primary, but you hadn't seen it in the general election in a few years. And just based on, I guess, the Doug Jones effect.
Because what happened with Doug Jones tripped Democrats thinking they might could win, and so all the candidates came back on the ticket. But you know, as the slang, as the kids say, like, we got woke, you know. So our team went to work, and it was all worth it on Tuesday.
Real quick before we get you out of here at the end of the segment, just talk about Jeff Sessions and stepping down yesterday. And you know, you put out a statement and mm-hmm. really, really thoughtful. But you know, you've been around Senator Sessions a long time. A Mobile guy. Yeah. So yeah, just talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, if you want to just talk the political part of Jeff Sessions, I mean, is there a more finer statesman in the state of Alabama? I mean, to put him in the top, if we go back in history, I don't care Democrat, Republican, he's going to be right up there. Simply because he's a man of character and integrity, and he loves our nation. I mean, honestly, I can see Jeff Sessions back with the founding fathers. I mean, I think he would have been in that room with them, helping write the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, you know, Declaration of Independence. He's that kind of guy.
Right.
But so when you have that kind of person in politics that's willing to get into the arena, isn't that the kind of people we want? No, I understand. He and the president have a frustration and a difference of opinions on some things, but it does not negate what Jeff did in putting Trump's policies in motion. In fact, I feel like I could properly argue of all the cabinet members, not trying to pit them against each other, but Jeff was as good as any as far as putting conservative policy on the table.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget. Like an attorney general, a cabinet position, you don't stick with the president all 8 years. These are really short-lived, you know, terms. They come and go. Obviously, Eric Holder was kind of an exception. He was like the longest-serving attorney general. But this, you know, this is not out of the ordinary for a attorney general to step aside after a midterm election. Cabinet officials come and go like this all the time.
Yeah, I think if you go back and look at each one, you'll see cabinet members, you know, coming and going.
2-3 years, and then they move on.
Right, but, you know, for us here in Alabama, this this path that we've watched, starting with Trump and then picking Jeff Sessions, and then there's a Senate race. And it really has just had this domino effect in our state that we haven't seen in a long time.
Well, Chairwoman Lathan, tell people where they can find more about the Alabama Republican Party.
Yes,
and find you on social media.
Yeah, please go to algop.org. Sign up for our free newsletter and our press releases and be involved. Join the Capital Club at $15 a month. You know, as rich Republicans we all hear about, which that's not true. Follow me on Twitter at Chairman Lathan. And also on Facebook, Chairman Lathan. I sure push out a lot of information for the folks.
All right, thanks for coming on.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Ford filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106. That also works as a text. Joining us on the line now is the congressman for the 1st Alabama Congressional District, Bradley Byrne. Congressman Byrne, thanks for coming on today.
Sure, Jeff. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, right out of the gate here. Congrats on your win Tuesday night. You did the debates. You did all the things you got to do and had a pretty good win.
Yeah, we felt great about it. We got about 64% of the vote, and that's a good number. But I think the thing that really was most heartening was just the spirit people had about everything. You know, you look at what's happened around the country, you would think everybody around here was all torn up, and people around here were extremely positive about not just me, but obviously people up and down the ballot. And you know, after that special election last year, I think what we did is we proved that was a fluke, because every statewide Republican got around 60% of the vote. So we're a Republican state, we're reliably a Republican state. I feel really good about our chances in 2020 of knocking Doug Jones off and electing a conservative.
Yeah, did you see a lot of the Kavanaugh effect? We talked a little bit about it on the campaign trail. Do you thought it was going to show up big on Tuesday? Do you think that was part of it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was in the grocery store line over the weekend, and there was a very nice gentleman in front of me. I would guess he was in his early 40s. And he shook my hand, introduced himself. He said, you know, I'm not a straight ticket voter. I don't do that, but I'm going to be a straight ticket voter this Tuesday. And I think that is pure and simple, the reaction to the Kavanaugh thing. I think people got angry, and I think it showed up. And what I read in one of the press stories was we had 65% of the people in Alabama on Tuesday voted straight ticket. Now, some of those were Democrats, obviously, but that's a huge percentage of people to be voting straight ticket, and I think it's the Kavanaugh effect.
So here we are sitting now. It looks like Democrats are going to control Congress. Where do you go from here? What do you expect in this next Congress?
Well, my priorities don't change. So my staff and I have talked about it. We're going to continue to do what we've been doing. Now, the Armed Services Committee, we're a pretty bipartisan group. I don't know that it will change the work I do there. And for our local purposes, I don't think that changed the work I do with Austal Shipyard on the ships that they make there.
Right.
But, like, I'm on the Workforce Committee, and it's going to be the opposite on that committee. We're going to have a lot of very partisan stuff come through there, and we'll have some real fights. All I know to do is to continue to hang on to my positions. I'll certainly be as verbal as I can be about my positions, but, you know, we'll get outvoted in that committee. And we'll see if they can get their votes together for some of the crazy stuff they want to do on the floor. But we just keep doing what we're doing and try to continue to be effective at it, and I think we will be.
Well, I saw a report, WKRG, last night. Or at least a headline portrays you as predicting Donald Trump's going to be impeached by the House. Do you see that in playing itself out over the next few months?
Oh, I think we're going to have a circus when it comes to their effort to impeach President Trump. I mean,
even with Nancy Pelosi saying it's going to take bipartisan effort, you still see this?
Oh, yeah. I don't think they cannot do it. But they won't succeed. I mean, I don't know for sure they can get it through the House. They have zero chance to get it through the Senate.
Right.
I mean, the Senate's not going to remove him from office. So this is just scratching an itch or just responding to, you know, their base. But I would be shocked if they didn't go through with an attempt to impeach him in the House. And I think we need to be prepared for it. I think we need to fight back in the House. Even if we lose, we set up the failed effort on their part when they go over to the Senate. So I think we need to be prepared as if they're going to.
Do you think they're going to try to take a shot at somebody? Like, there's been some talk to Brett Kavanaugh. They're going to go after him and try to impeach him. Do you think they're going to try any of that?
They might. And I think that one actually will be harder for them, in my opinion, because I think a lot of Democrats around the country saw the Kavanaugh effect, and they don't want any part of that. I will predict there's going to be a similar effect if they try to impeach President Trump. I think it will turn people off, and I think it will be a mighty weapon in our quiver when we get down to the 2020 elections.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if they don't, they dissatisfy a base, and, you know, so maybe that's part of the calculus here. They think that they got to do this, and that sort of turns things around. So I suspect you're correct on that. Let's talk a little bit about 2020. You mentioned Doug Jones being a one and done guy. What are you looking at? I believe it's been reported you're kind of exploring your options right now.
Yeah, I've been traveling around the state for the last several months now, talking to people that I know and some people I don't know around the state about it. Obviously, it's kind of early in the process, but we've gotten a lot of encouragement. I had a lot of questions yesterday. Well, what about Jeff Sessions now that he's no longer Attorney General? I've not had a chance to talk to Jeff, and I don't know where he is right now and is thinking about that, and he's probably not thinking about that because of what he's just been through. But he and I will have that conversation. But in the meantime, I'm going to continue my exploration of that possibility. Look, Doug Jones does not match up with the people of Alabama. I mean, he's Chuck Schumer's senator, not Alabama senator. And we need an Alabama senator. Somebody's going to vote the way the rest of us think. And I think clearly as a result of the elections on Tuesday, you know, we should get somebody that will win that seat by double digits.
Right.
But we have to pick the right person, and we need to not get all divided up. We need to remember who we are, go through our primaries, and that's the primary, whoever our nominee is, get 100% behind that person and elect them.
Congressman, where are you at right now on the leadership fight? I guess you're going to be electing a minority leader now. How do you feel about that, and what should we expect?
Well, there are two people running. Kevin McCarthy called me yesterday, but I was in the middle of other things, and I didn't get a chance to take his call. But I had a really good conversation with Jim Jordan. Jim is a good friend of mine, was very gracious to me when I first got to Congress, and he and I talk off and on a fair amount. And so we had a great conversation, and he would be a great minority leader. There's no question about it. It's a little different equation when you're running for minority leader than when you're running speaker, because to be speaker, you have to have 218 votes. To be minority leader, you just have to have half of the conference. So that means you got to have a little over 100 votes. And I don't know, with all the work that Kevin McCarthy's done, whether he doesn't already have it locked up or not, I don't know. But I sure appreciate the conversation I had yesterday with Jim, and I think Jim would be a good minority leader.
Just kind of looking back at Tuesday night, is it your impression that what could have been done maybe that maybe stopped this Democratic takeover? Was there something? Could Trump have gone to some more congressional districts? Or could you have maybe a more active leadership getting out there, you know, instead of a lame duck speaker or whatever? Could there have been more done for House members to keep them in power and in control of the United States Congress?
You know, I've been asking myself that question, and I've been looking at who won and who lost. And there's only one pattern that you're seeing, because we had some good conservatives that lost, like Dave Brat, Pete Sessions, as well as some of the moderates. So it wasn't like all the moderates that didn't stick with us on like things like health care, they lost, and the good conservatives won. A lot of good conservatives got beat too. The one pattern across there is that we did not perform well in suburban districts. So Pete Sessions, I mentioned him, he's in suburban Dallas. Dave Brat's up there in the suburbs of Virginia. Karen Handel's over there in the suburbs of Atlanta. We just found out that she's lost. So obviously, there's or the way they're presenting our message did not play well on Tuesday with people in these suburban areas. So, and this is going to be part of our leadership discussion, because the other big thing we're going to do is we're going to pick a leader of our conference, and that's where our messaging gets done. And it looks like that's going to be Liz Cheney, the daughter of Vice President Cheney, who has become a very close friend of mine. And I think that's what we've got to decide. One of the things that Jim Jordan and I discussed yesterday was, you know, are our policies wrong? And I said, no, I don't think our policies are wrong. And I don't think we should run away from President Trump. I think that's part of our strength. I think it's
how we're making that message out there, how we're doing it. And we've got to be a little more careful about some of the things we say and how we say them. I think that's part of it. But I don't want us to change our substantive positions. And I think we need to stay right next to Trump because I think he's going to win in 2020. And I think he helps us in our effort to take the House back in 2020.
Is there a Trump effect at play? So we mentioned the losses in the suburbs and kind of toning down or whatever it is, gearing the message to moderating the message in a way that appeals to more suburban electorate. Is that more Trump and his tweets and the stuff he does and his press conferences, bombastic style that sells a lot to the base? I would argue there's a pro and a con. Are you going to, as a member of the House and looking at these elections and each of these individual congressional seats, is there a Trump sort of effect that you have to overcome?
You know, I don't know the answer to that because I don't have that in my district, so I didn't have to deal with it like these others did. I do wonder that whether we did the job we should have done as we went through the health care reform push. You know, we got out messages in that, because if you believed all the stuff that was out there during that, you would have thought we were, you know, pushing grandmother over the cliff in her wheelchair. And we just got completely out messaged during that. And I think as we go through things in the next 2 years, we need to stop back and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Now, how do we position this in the best possible way so that we don't get ourselves out messaged? Now, remember, we start with two strikes against us because the national news media is right. Not for us. So every time we do something, they're going to mischaracterize. Well, we just need to understand that's the case and plan how we're going to present it in a way that we get how we get around that. And the person that gets around it the best is President Trump. I mean, people complain about his tweets. I hear that all the time. But that's how he gets around the national news media, and it drives them crazy that he's able to do that.
Do you have to deal with a lot of that media environment in Alabama? There's a little bit of it, but it seems to me that maybe Alabama's a textbook example of how to deal with the media and not have to really get around and with your messaging.
You know, I have the best relationship with most of the people in statewide and local news media here. I'm not saying that, you know, they just do whatever I want them to do. There are times when they don't, but I mean, I think on the whole, I think our local media and statewide media does a pretty good job of just sort of presenting it out there. I got a couple of columnists for AL.com that don't like me very much, but that's a different story. So, you know, the way I do things, and this is everybody's got their own style, I'm just kind of like I am right now. I just sort of tell them like it is. And these local and state news media folks are pretty good about presenting exactly what I said in a pretty fair and balanced way, and so people can make up their own minds whether they like what I'm saying or not.
All right. Well, there you have it. Congressman Byrne, I want to thank you for coming on Midday Mobile and FM Talk 106.5.
I'm glad to be with you, Jeff.
All right. There you have it, and we'll certainly be hearing more from him, I suspect, in the upcoming few months, over the next year or so. But we're coming right back. Got one more segment to go. FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poor closing out the show today on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Want to thank the great Dalton Orwig for holding my hand during these last few shows that I've sat in for Sean on.
No problem. They've been great. I mean, you've had some really good guests on, everyone from Congressman Byrne to Chairwoman Lathan, who we had on earlier this hour, and then all kinds of writers that have been writing about Washington and state politics in Alabama. I think it's been a good covering of the post-midterm elections.
But rest assured, everybody, Sean Sullivan will be back Monday, and you can fine-tune your ears and not have to listen to my voice anymore.
Except when you're on with Sean. There's that.
Yeah, there is that, but that's they've got that down to once a week. They just call me in when they, I guess whenever there's a pickle or something, and or somebody just wants a day off, right?
Yeah, well, Sean will have a week and a half of hot takes stored up, so maybe bring an ice pack if you're going to listen on Monday.
A fire extinguisher.
A fire extinguisher. There you go.
Call the fire station. Have them on sound on standby. Real quick, got my Lanyap article out this day. I want to promote that. We're mm-hmm. gonna, you know, kind of you're at the weird time when you have to have a deadline before an election, and then the election happens. Then you have, you know, everybody knows what's happened, but when you wrote the piece, you didn't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to write, thinking ahead. So obviously, I thought ahead, and we're kind of looking at next year's legislative session and where we are with the lottery, with the gas tax. I think, was what we talked about with Sean Ross, Yellowhammer News yesterday. I think the gas tax is probably likely to happen. I also think that we'll at least see a lottery on the ballot. The lottery issue, there's a lot of other things going on, as you know. Once you okay a lottery in Alabama, it opens up other gaming on the Porch Creeks on where I stayed last night at the casino in Atmore. They're able to do class three gaming, and that might be the one thing that keeps a lot of people from voting for a lottery. And also the other thing on the other side of that, what do we use that money for? You know, education lottery. Everybody likes to use education and kind of pit it as a political thing to get what they want. We gotta raise taxes for the kids. How can you be against the kids? That's probably I suspect what we'll be with that. And then obviously the gas tax. As you know, driving from one end of the state to the other, the roads are horrible. I-65 anywhere around Birmingham, forget about it. 565 in Huntsville, they're putting in that new Toyota Mazda plant gridlock going into Madison County out of Limestone County. And down here, of course, the bridge, the tunnel situation. But there's some other hot spots in Baldwin County that we're aware of, especially heading down toward Fairhope Way and all the red lights and all the backups there. So, you know, I think if you're looking for any intrigue, it's going to be how they're going to deal with infrastructure issues and some of these bridges and roads. And you know, in these rural places where they want their four lane, I know for years and years and years, Monroeville is not connected to the I-65 with a four lane. That's one thing those folks really, really want. If somebody ever came in and said, I'm going to work on getting your four lane from 84 or 21 or whatever it is, that's probably a winning message up there. But I think those sort of stories are all throughout the state, and that's going to be what's going to be used to push this gas tax. And you have a weird situation where you have Republicans that ran as conservatives. They ran as who's the most Trump and who's going to help Trump. They're going to run as tax hikers, and that'll certainly be interesting. But this new quadrennium, they always get the hard stuff out of the way the first year, and then going into that, you know, later on into the election, people tend to forget about that stuff.
Well, you mentioned infrastructure and Trump, and you know, that's one of the things that he ran pretty heavy on in that 2016 election. You remember he kept talking about all of the airports he's visited around the world, and they've got runways smooth like glass, and you wouldn't believe how nice their roads are. Infrastructure is a big deal, and you know, reading the national news, it doesn't seem like much has been done as far as infrastructure nationally. Do you think that'll be something that maybe he and this new Democratic House can maybe cross the aisle on?
It's got to happen fast. It's got to happen before we get into presidential politics season. So very early on, there was talk of a $1 trillion stimulus package that was going to do all these things with infrastructure that we didn't do with the last stimulus. I don't know that there's an appetite for that. That'll turn away a lot of conservatives. They don't, you know, there are a lot of people that are deficit hawks that just don't think that that's where we need to be with all this spending and not really addressing the entitlement, you know, doing any kind of entitlement reform and doing all these things. But if there's one thing, I think right out of the gate, if they're going to work on a deal, if Trump, Pelosi, and McConnell are going to work on something, it'll be infrastructure. And they'll, you know, every Democratic state will get its port, it'll get its bridge, it'll get its bike path, it'll get its, you know, like down here, it'll be the port. They'll get money for the bridge. They'll do all these things in all these places. I think that's what it's going to take. It's got to be some kind of bipartisan effort. It's got to be done real quick before we get into the presidential election season. This is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan. Let him talk 106.5 at the Paul Feinbaum Show coming up next. And Sean will be back here on Monday. Thanks for having me in.